Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Castor, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Aaron Greffreth. Hello, Aaron.
How you doing, Gary?
I'm doing all right. So Aaron's a new director of Parks and Recreation here in Jefferson City. So first of all, congratulations.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I was born and raised in Jefferson City. I kind of had the best of both worlds growing up. I went to public schools and then I transferred or switched to Helias. So I've had a Catholic setting in me as well. I did graduate in 1991 from Helias Catholic High School. Then I had decided to go to college at Lincoln. I wasn't sure what I wanted to pursue. I was, you know, very, very interested in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went through, got all my general ed done. At classes, and I'll never forget Dr. Tatum. The day that I went in and had my academic card signed for the next semester, she said, "You are done with all your general eds. I am not signing your card until you declare a major." So I had to declare a major on spot. I chose physical education for whatever reason. You know, I thought teaching was another thing I was passionate about. I had some great teachers growing up that certainly influenced me as an individual, and I wanted to give back what they did to me. So I ended up graduating from Lincoln in 1997 with a Bachelor of Science degree in physical education. Ended up teaching for a couple of years locally at St. Joseph Catholic School here in Jefferson City. I taught health and physical education K through 8. Then I decided that I wanted to look at other career options. I was fortunate to take a position with the Jefferson City YMCA. I started as youth and family director. I progressed to senior program leader there, but I enjoyed working there for about 7 or 8 years, kind of at the end of that, decided that I wanted to pursue and advance my education. So myself and some other friends from college decided we're going to go back and do our master's because they were teaching. So it was more important to them to obtain their master's, and they kind of tagged me along. And so I ended up going to William Woods and getting my master's in education with emphasis on athletic administration, finished that program. And then an opportunity presented itself at State Tech. So I was fortunate to go down there and open the activity center there, which was an amazing opportunity. State Tech is doing wonderful things in the community then and as far as now as well. So I was there for about 8 years, and the opportunity came available to take the assistant director position at JC Parks, which was nice because it was closer to home. It eliminated that 25 to 30 minute drive one way to Lynn, because I really enjoyed working in Lynn. But once again, I wanted to serve the citizens of Jefferson City. So I decided to make the switch to JC Parks, and here we are today. So that's kind of the nutshell.
All right. Well, and full disclosure, so Aaron and I first met when he was at State Tech, the Activity Center. And at that point, I would say it was a much smaller footprint for State Tech than it is now. And it was quite an innovation at that time for the Activity Center. And I remember you talking about how much volume of basketball tournaments and things you were able to coordinate to bring into that Activity Center that really blew beyond what the original scope of it was. And I just found it amazing. It was kind of a foreshadowing what happens at the link, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you're exactly right. You know, when they hired me at State Tech, it was, you know, how can we get students involved with the small focus on community? But we found the value of both, because it not only lent itself to the community getting to know the students through memberships and activities, but the students were able to engage in the community through those programs as well. And certainly to take and start tournaments down there on my own, you know, I started, I think my first tournament maybe had 12. And by the time I left, I was at, you know, 60 tournaments, 3 tournaments a season, which is, you know, was every other weekend in the winter months, which was a lot. But yeah, so, and then to transition into the link, I was able to take some of those foundations that, you know, I kind of learned throughout the process down at State Tech and incorporate them and implement them here in Jefferson City. The only difference is I didn't have to run tournaments. We were able to work with Hoops Midwest, and they ran the tournament. So that took a load off my plate in itself. But, you know, a lot of the same principles, philosophies, because I think that students and community members, it's great, especially at the link now, for the community members to see what great students are at Lincoln University. Because I, for whatever reason, I think that there's always that perception that if there's trouble in the link, you know, if we have an issue or an incident, you know, we often get asked, oh, well, was it students? Well, no, most of our issues that we do encounter at the link derive from community members engaging in activities they shouldn't be. I'm pleased to say that our relationship with Lincoln is very strong, and can't wait to see what the future holds as well.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about Jefferson City Parks, it's not just a bunch of green land there, right? So kind of give folks an idea of what the nature of parks are.
Sure. You know, currently in our inventory, we have approximately 1,400 acres of land, and then we have about 40 miles of both hard and soft trails, you know, greenways, and then we have our biking trails, et cetera. And then we also, you know, within that 1,400 acres, we have about 9 what we call neighborhood parks, the major parks, which do provide opportunities to improve quality of life for families to visit, you know, Community Park being our latest park that we renovated approximately 4 years ago. It's hard to believe it's been four or five years ago, but looking what that's done, and we talk about economic impact, you know, we do see visitors and hear of visitors coming in from outside of the area that travel to Jefferson City just for that park specific. So when we design a park, you know, we think of certainly trying to improve, like I said, that quality of life for Jefferson City residents. We want to think of, you know, what can it do for local businesses as well? And I think that's a strong foundation that we focus on, is trying to make stuff that's accessible for all as well. It's kind of one of our big things moving forward too, is we want to look at inclusive parks and how can we give the same opportunities to anybody that comes through the gate at the parks. I think that's a super important thing moving forward as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, along those lines, so philosophically, it seems as if sometimes there's a debate about what the role of parks should be in a community, right? How much attention should be given to it? Why are parks important to a community? Let's start with that idea.
You know, I look back to what parks did for me as a child growing up in Jefferson City, and I'll never forget, because we lived at the very top of Jefferson Street, almost by Highway 54, the viaduct right there. And my sisters and I, we would walk down Jefferson Street, cross the Highway 50 up to the bus stop at the very top of High Street to catch a bus to go to the pool almost every day in the summer, which, of course, you think of that now, you know, how many parents are going to send a 9 or a 10-year-old on their own to cross a major highway in Jefferson City. But I think of not only what a park has done for me, you know, it instilled in me, not only are we able to participate in activities, whether it's baseball, aquatics, ice arena, it also instilled in me that when I'm there, I have to respect people. It kind of taught me, you know, a way of life, so to speak, because that was my way of life growing up. And I think it's important that when we design and when we think of our parks, that we have to keep that in mind, that it's not always about just having a park that's accessible. We have to think of what it does for someone from the, you know, complete wellness side of, you know, socially, mentally, what parks can really do, because it goes beyond just active participation. It's that wellness component.
Yeah. So obviously, parks is a big operation in Jefferson City. A lot of money is spent on parks. So let's talk about, first of all, where that money comes from, how big your staff is. You know, we've talked about the inventory of parks, but how big of a staff do you have?
So right now we have approximately 48 full-time staff that do work on the park side, recreation side, and then also what we call community outreach and out arts. Then season by season, depending upon what activities are going on, part-time staff can range from, you know, during the busy time to, I'd say, 200 between the lifeguards, the ice arena, all the sports activities, approximately 200 part-time in the summer months. And then outside of that, we're probably dropped down in the fall and the winter season of approximately, I'd say, 75 part-time staff. And that's probably a little bit high, but, you know, it definitely declines, you know, after the pool season's over and stuff like that. As far as, you know, the budget, we do receive funds from the CIP fund, the capital improvement tax, and then also our dedicated sales tax, which does help us fund those projects that we want to do. And then also our general fund revenue as well that assists us as well. You know, right now we're spending a lot of time as a staff and really coming up with a plan and a roadmap for the future. And what does it look like when it comes to what do we need to fund moving forward? So we're putting together a very, what I consider a very strong list of items that we need to do. But what it's also done, it's also forced our hand to look at other opportunities that we currently haven't done and aren't doing now, such as grants, and then, you know, really getting our foundation active and involved in, you know, helping us sell what we want to do so they can fundraise for us as well. Because, you know, moving ahead, nothing's getting cheap. Right. Some of these projects are getting expensive. And by creating that roadmap, it kind of keeps it in perspective for us. We know that that plan is going to change. We know that something that's on that list today could change tomorrow and it may come off and we may replace it with something else. But at least we can gauge what we want to do moving forward. So we're really excited about that project that we've been working on for the past, you know, 3 or 4 months. Because that's going to help us all when it even comes to budgeting down the road, too, to kind of already know that we have those projects identified. for the next 3 to 5, 10 years.
Sure. Well, I know it's probably been 5 years or so ago. Parks worked on a master plan, so I assume this punch list, if you will, mm-hmm. or a priority list, it works in tandem with the master plan, or are you going a different direction from the master plan?
So some of the projects that we've identified do go hand in hand with that master plan. But one of the things that we've identified since it's been 5 years, that part of our next step is to identify, let's revisit that master plan and maybe do, you know, with that master plan, do an update to that plan and see what's been done, what needs to be done moving forward, and what things have changed since that initial, you know, when they met with the community groups that wanted, said that they wanted trails or they wanted this or they wanted that. By revisiting that, I think it creates that opportunity to make sure that our roadmap, it's easy for us to sit in a room and say, we want to do this, 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 you know, as far as projects. But I think community feedback is super important because mm-hmm. they're the ones that support us. Their tax dollars essentially help fund these projects. And I think community input is super important.
Yeah. Again, and this kind of circles back to, so if you were asked, what is the economic benefit of a robust park system?
Sure. And that's something that we're working on within the department, is putting the true dollar amounts on that. But anytime someone comes into a park, when we think of economic impact, if they stop at a gas station or if they stop at a restaurant prior to or after, you know, I think that those dollars are super important when it comes to communities. You know, I think back to the month of August in particular, because August was a super slow month for us, which was very, very rare. We didn't have any basketball tournaments because there was other activities going on. Long story short, there was a local business owner that owns a restaurant that inquired with some of our staff and commission. They're like, when are you guys going to host another tournament? Because we've seen the impact. Mm. So what we're doing does make that impact. And I think that the local restaurant owners and business owners, they see that. And that's the message we like to hear. But it's also something we like to be a part of. The economic value of parks is just, it's indescribable. And it's something that communities thrive on.
So listeners, we're going to take a little break from our conversation. I want to share a couple things we're doing here at the News Tribune that you might want to check out. April 2nd, there's going to be an election here in the capital city, and we are gearing up our coverage so we can help you make decisions as to who you want to represent you. So we will be publishing a weekly newsletter that's free. If you go to our website at newstribune.com and choose the newsletter in the menu, or you can go to our show notes and we'll have a link there. It'll take you right to that sign up for the newsletter. We also encourage you, if you have questions for candidates from anywhere around central Missouri, drop us an email. We'll be happy to ask the candidates for you and then publish those responses. Just drop us an email at vote@newstribune.com. Now, back to our conversation. You've been in the role here as director for maybe 2 weeks?
Not quite 2 weeks. Right. About a week and a half officially.
All right. So you've seen a little lay of the land here. So what are some of the challenges you think you're going to face as a director?
Well, I think it's some of the stuff that we've talked about is, you know, I really have three things when I think of potential struggles and kind of my own platform. You know, the first one that we talked about was spending money. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be a good steward of the taxpayers' money. And I think that's probably moving ahead is going to be the major struggle that I encounter. We're kind of dealing with it now with some of the projects we have pending because people don't see that true value of maybe investing in, I'll just use an example, the Box Creek Trail connection that we're yeah. working on between Riverside Park and East McCarty. Some people don't see the value of that. But others that you ask do see the value. I see the value personally because of accessibility from, you know, those residents in that area and being able to get to that trail within so many minutes. But I think that's going to be the number one struggle that I'm going to encounter moving forward is just, I think we have people that are very loyal to parks, but I would love to change the mindset of some of the ones that are not necessarily naysayers, but don't understand. I want to be the type yeah. of director that is at the forefront, that's open to discussion, that, you know, if someone ever has questions, I always, whether it's a staff member or a community member, my door is wide open. I would love to talk to anybody that has questions to hopefully gain their support, but also to provide them with the knowledge of why we do what we do.
Sure, sure. So again, looking at that landscape, what are some opportunities that you see?
Well, moving ahead, I mean, as far as opportunities, I think that we have, you know, some great opportunities in regards to some type of an inclusive park within the community, because mm-hmm. that's super important. The question, you know, obviously comes with the funding question that we've talked about, but then location, where do we put it? Because, you know, we want to make sure that we're looking at the true landscape of the city too. We don't want to get too caught up in restricting to one specific area of the community that we're focusing and putting a lot of money into. We want to make sure that we spread it throughout the community as well. So whether it's central, east, you know, west, we want to make sure that we're trying to attract and create new for all.
So when you talk about an inclusive park, for those who may not be aware, explain what some of the features of it would be versus community park.
Sure. I mean, you know, you think of whether it's accessibility as far as someone that may be in a wheelchair, you know, working within the compliance of ADA and, you know, some of those guidelines. And then, you know, to know that it's other, you know, implications that we may have to incorporate too, such as some sound features or lack thereof sound features, you know, because noise does restrict and it does hinder some people from attending parks. So we have to really be mindful of all aspects when it comes to inclusivity, whether it's, like I said, mobility or auditory, physical limitations, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's just kind of do a little bit of a status update on some of the projects. Parks has more than a few projects going on right now, right?
We do, yes. I'd say the big one right now is probably our dedicated pickleball courts.
Yeah.
We are constructing 8 pickleball courts at the former Dunsing ball fields. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, we do get asked quite a bit, well, why are you taking a baseball or softball field out of inventory, you know, because you're going to need it. And really, when we acquired the 63 Diamonds ball fields, we added 4 fields to our inventory. The nice thing with that, with 4 there and then the 5 at Bender, it's nice to have games and leagues and tournaments all in, you know, 1 or 2 locations as opposed to kind of the pocket parks or the neighborhood parks that used to be very successful, such as, you know, Lions Field and Dunsing. Those were the premier. That's really all that we had back in the day. And then Bender developed and then now with 63. But going back to the pickleball courts, so we're very excited to construct it there. Parking lot's already there. The restrooms, concessions are already there. We're going to have to do some renovations to the restrooms and the concession stand, but the meat and potatoes, so to speak, are already there. So with 8 dedicated courts, there won't be any conflicts with tennis, and tennis won't have to conflict with pickleball. We won't have to move nets around. We're really excited because that's a growing sport. You know, everywhere you look, they're looking to do a little bit more, and nationwide, we're excited to be a part of that. And that project's set to be completed by, we're still hoping, by May the 1st.
Okay.
It'll be a lighted complex, and we'll have security cameras and stuff like that. Security is a big thing to me, and, you know, we'll make sure that we do it right.
Okay. So what's going on at Riverside?
So Riverside, obviously with the amphitheater, that's the big thing. We have our concert season right around the corner. You know, that's the big thing there is we're working through. We always want to make sure that we're doing the right things within the parks. We're fortunate we attract some great acts. We want to be able to pull in even larger acts for our size of our amphitheater, which some of those updates require electrical updates for lighting and stuff like that. Stuff that, you know, we need to do if we want to attract those larger scale acts. You know, we're doing some renovations as far as installing a cooler, a walk-in cooler for the beverages and stuff like that, because we can do the initial cool down of beverages. But if it's a hot day and, you know, you cycle through, you sell all that, trying to get all that other stuff cooled down, we can't get ahead of that. And then, you know, in some situations, people unfortunately may have purchased a warm beverage and, you know, express their displeasure. And I can't blame them, you know.
Sure.
You pay that kind of money in a concession, whether it's a ball field or an amphitheater, you know, you want a quality beverage. And so we are working through that. And then also at Ellis Porter, you know, we just continue to look at the botanical gardens. You know, that's a project that's out there. You know, when we think of budgeted amount versus true project cost, you know, we're pretty far off, but we're looking at how can we phase that project in? So we're not what is essentially, you know, multi-million-dollar project. How do we take a bite maybe each year to potentially fund and complete that project over a series of years?
Okay. Memorial Park.
Memorial Park. We recently had an assessment done on the Memorial Park pool just because we were getting ready to install a Playtot structure, and it wasn't going to be a cheaper investment, but we wanted to make sure with our current infrastructure that did it make sense to put that play structure in, not knowing how long the filtration systems, how long the drainage, how long the pumps, what's the life that we had left in the facility. Mm-hmm. So we decided to kind of pump the brakes and call in an organization, have them come in and do an assessment on the pool, identify how many more years we do have in those pumps and, you know, the filtration systems. What does that top structure look like as it relates to the current pool structure. And we're anxious to get those true findings back at the next commission meeting on February 13th, which should tell us a pretty good tale of what does it, the infrastructure of the pool really look like. So because we have kind of pumped the brakes once again on that play tot area, just because it doesn't make any sense to invest that kind of money right now with the unknowns.
And, yeah.
You know, 3 years down the road, if, you know, we have to take it out, we just wasted taxpayers' money and we're not going to operate that way. We're going to be smart about it. So, and then Memorial Park Pavilion has, you know, been identified with some structural issues, mm-hmm. some concrete issues. We need to do some renovations to the restrooms there. So we're actually looking to do some of those possibly starting this fall to take care of any structural concerns that have been identified and repair that. So that construction process would be approximately October of 2024 through hopefully be completed by next spring in 2025. Then at that time, you know, going back to Ellis, the Ellis Porter Pavilion, with a windstorm and went through there, we did have some damage on the pavilion there. Nothing structurally, but more of like the roof over the restrooms and stuff like that. So we're going to try to get Memorial Pavilion up to true performance and, you know, standards, like I said, this next fall. And then next year, we will look at, you know, doing Ellis Porter Pavilion renovations.
So Bender, McClung, community parks.
So McClung was, you know, at the same time that community park was renovated approximately, as well as an amphitheater approximately 4 years ago. McClung's been updated, so we're good there. Mm-hmm. You know, the only thing that we look at there is how do we, you know, as far as security and stuff, do we put in a gate? You know, we're looking at some security prevention kind of isolated to incidents we've had there. How do we correct those? But infrastructure and buildings, we're good there in McClung. Out at Bender, this past December, we shut down the campground for the full month. We did cleanup. We did some expansion of current pads for the campers. We moved some plumbing heads. We feel like we're in good shape there for our campground. We have 17 sites out there. We think that we're on a good path there. We have received an archery range grant. So we're looking to put that, construct that out at Bender Park. So we're working with conservation on an exact location mm-hmm. and a timeline on that. But that's an exciting thing to always be able to work with the guys and gals at Missouri Department of Conservation. And then other than that, you know, we currently continue to look at current infrastructure once again at Bender. You know, when it comes to pavilion update, we do have the one pavilion out there, the restrooms that we mm-hmm. have, you know, they do need updating. And then also with our disc golf, you know, disc golf is kind of becoming a popular sport as well. Individual sports really took off when COVID kind of ran its course, that people decided that, you know, team sports might not be for them. But, you know, when we talk about pickleball being on the increase, I would say it's safe to say the same is for disc golf too. So we're looking at possibly doing a few improvements there. I actually met with one of the local disc golf organizers this morning, actually, and we talked about how can we improve that golf course to hopefully attract and bring in new people. So we're looking at doing a few things out there as well.
Yeah. What about Deborah Cooper Park?
Really, that park is pretty much done except for, you know, some sod. We decided to hold off instead of doing it in late fall this year. We decided to put it off to spring. So hopefully mm-hmm. it would take a little bit better. I know staff are working on some plannings around the park. We did also receive, I guess you would call it, in-kind donation from the Lions Club that's assisting us with some of those plannings financially, which is great to have community partners like that because, you know, they do help drive what we can do and the timeline we can do it in. So we certainly appreciate that. So we'll finish up the plannings and do the sod, get everything finalized this spring there, and then that park should be completed.
Yeah. Okay. I guess as we wrap stuff up, what is the best kept secret, Aaron, when it comes to Jefferson City Parks?
From my standpoint, I think the best kept secret is the staff that we have, the dedicated staff, mm-hmm. whether it's the program leaders or the maintenance staff. But I think from community member, I think the best kept secret is just that all of our parks provide that opportunity for a little bit of everything and everyone. But we just have so many great things in the community. Yeah. It depends upon what you like. Like I like live music. So the amphitheater is what I like the most. But, you know, when it comes to community fitness and wellness, I still hear people that say, oh, I've never even heard of the Link. And, mm-hmm. you know, for them to be able to come in and exercise there, I think that the Link is, unfortunately, is still a well-kept secret. And that's not what we want. We want people to come in and enjoy it and get some recreation and also exercise as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, since we're enjoying a nice little spate of nice weather here, we'll end by just encouraging folks to check out the parks and certainly go to the parks website. We'll have links in our show notes and you can check out some of the offerings there.
Certainly. It's a great day to get out of the parks and we like to say it's right outside your front door.
All right. Well, Aaron, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.